2, Marjorie Silverman and Bessie Hammond are interviewing Frida Shapiro at her home at 5533 Aylesboro Avenue on January 12, 1979. Interviewing Frida Shapiro at her home at 5533 Aylesboro Avenue on January 12, 1979. This is Pittsburgh Section National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. Frida, tell us about your father. Who was your father?
Well, my dad, Joseph Goldstein, was born in Pittsburgh on Tunnel Street, a street which he briefly told us was obliterated in the Pittsburgh Renaissance. His father and mother had come from Lithuania, but his mother died in childbirth with the next child after him. And his father, and I believe that, I'm not sure about that child. I kind of remember that she did grow to maturity, but then died. But he never spoke about her. His father remarried very early, and the stepmother, although described by relatives who knew her, was supposed to have been a very nice person. She clearly did not welcome my father. And he was kind of ousted from the family and taken into the home of his maternal grandmother, whom he remembers as his true mother. And he's, I'm named for both his mother and his grandmother, Frida and Rachel. This lovely lady gave him his start. She lived alone. She had very little money, but she doted on him, and he talked with great pleasure about the way she shined the copper kitchen utensils every Friday morning, and the way she, when one day when he was late to school and didn't get any breakfast, she put on her shawl and brought in a hot bagel and came to the school, knocked on the door of the classroom, said to the teacher that little Joe had not had his breakfast and would please be allowed to eat something. And the teacher said, certainly, and sent my father into some private place where he could have some breakfast. And the fact is that she gave him his, he was a marvelous father and a marvelous husband and concentrated his whole life on the family. And she gave him the example. When she died, he was past his bar mitzvah, maybe around 14. He then had to go back to the home of his father and stepmother. And those years, he remembers with great bitterness. There was quite a family after that of half brothers and sisters. But his stepmother resented his presence, did not want to give him all the food that was served for the rest of the family, hid, locked up desserts and things so that he would not get them. And to his dying day, when he had nightmares or when he was in the hospital under deep anesthetic and no longer didn't know where he was, he thought he could see himself back in those years when he was treated with such discrimination.
Do you want to tell
he
us something?
He actually took very good care of the family and supported the community.
Do you want to tell me something about your father himself?
My dad was, you know, I don't know what he my dad was a witty, clever, very bright young man who got his first start working with Abe Lauf as a grocery salesman. Oh, he did a lot of things. He was a Western Union messenger, and one of the stories is that when McKinley was assassinated, he was up at the Western Union office and would hear the news right away. He left his job, went right downtown, bought a bunch of newspapers, and felt this is where the money is. And apparently had a very successful day selling newspapers. His grandmother left him $400. And he a minor at that time, 4 or 2 years old or so, went into the bank. He said to the bank, "Now, if I leave my money with you in marriage, I will give you my business later." And the banker said, "Young man, we will accept this arrangement and you will go far." He was apparently a very good salesman. His sense of humor won him friends wherever he went. And during the course of he traveled throughout the area to the little mining town selling 4A Black, who was the father of Anna Black Perla. And Abe Black treated him as a father. He considered it was just a very close and fine relationship. He met in the course of the salesmanship Joe Porter and Ben Chase, who had started the grocery business. And they decided to be in the business together in 1918, and along with Myra Weinberg, they established the grocery, which my dad was the buyer. And it did grow and prosper. He was timid about it then, and he learned to play golf, and he became a photographer. Both hobbies carried him the rest of his life. He became friends and developed a great... he enjoyed life through those two experiences. Dad was always the life of the neighbor.
Tell me about your mother. Who is your mother?
My mother, Dora Borenstein.
How do you spell Borenstein?
B-O-R-N-S-T-E-I-N. Came to Pittsburgh when she was 12 in 1903. She was born in a small town outside of Odessa, Tamashville. They went to Odessa for her to attend gymnasium. But my mother's father, Leon Borenstein, was a very unstable individual. My grandmother married him through an arranged marriage. The two families were friends, and they were both very cultivated and well-respected families. But the son to whom my grandmother was married was not a stable person. He made her life very unhappy. They actually had 4 children, one of whom died in infancy. But he deserted both Russia and my grandmother. He went to England, and emissaries were sent to him from the families urging him to give my grandmother a divorce. He refused, however, said that he would never divorce her. Ultimately, he came to this country, and my grandmother received the message that he wanted her to come to Pittsburgh. She packed up their belongings. The 3 children were on the boat when they could see the crane, which was loading the baggage and the parcels, dropped some big parcels, and it was their belongings. So very few things came over from Russia, but we still have down pillows, which were brought here in 1903, which are in their original casings, and just a few other things, some silver candlesticks, which were used at our home on Friday night service. Anyway, my mother and her brother and sister, Meyer Borenstein and Becky Borenstein, and my grandmother, Edith, arrived at Ellis Island, ticketed for Pittsburgh.
No one met them at Ellis Island, but they were sent straight through to Pittsburgh. And again, no one met them at the railroad station. But after a while, my grandfather did make an appearance, took the family to an apartment which he had rented for them, I believe on Dinwiddie Street, stayed a day or two, and disappeared forever. I never met him. He never communicated with my grandmother. I do remember, though, as a child, that there was one occasion when he did go through Pittsburgh and asked to see my Aunt Becky. My Aunt Becky was also a very unstable individual, and apparently they did have that in common. He died ultimately in Seattle, and I really know very little about him.
Did your mother go to school in Pittsburgh?
My mother's formal schooling stopped in Odessa at the gymnasium, but she enrolled in Council House English classes. And she also enrolled in the class that Council House, this was at the old Irene Kaufman, it was originally our Council House. And she wanted to study dressmaking, but she was always disappointed. That class was full, and she was assigned to a millinery class, which she took, but it didn't make her as happy as the other. But she did learn English there and went to work immediately. She worked in Kaufman's and in a drugstore, I believe keeping accounts.
How old was she then?
She was 12 years old and went to work immediately. She was a big, healthy girl. And she got other recreation at Council House. She liked to play basketball. She was a very robust, active, energetic person. And I think was very beautiful in those years from the pictures and from my memory of her as a child.
Briefly, how did she meet your father?
She and Ben Rayfield and Rose Least, Rose Rayfield. There was another friend, Abe Mellencoff, who went to California early and became established in the outdoor movie theater business. They were the group that double dated. My mother, I think my dad was the only person she ever went with seriously. She married when she was 22 and he was 23. Stop it a minute. My mother felt that her chief, one of the best ways she had to learn English was to attend every lecture given in Pittsburgh when outside speakers came. She attended them all, and some of them were from the Rutherford people. But all the outstanding speakers who came to town, my mother heard, and although she did not have formal English training, she spoke perfectly, grammatically, without a trace of accent. She, to her dying day, I think I heard her say damn once, but her language was the language of a very literate person, although she had not studied in Pittsburgh, other than Council.
Do you have
my father, who was born here and was a graduate of Fifth Avenue High, did not speak as cultivated an English as she spoke. He spoke the language of his neighborhood. My mother also attended. There was great interest in the theater and in music, and my mother went standing room to every opera concert, light opera performance, which was possible for her to go to, and she had great pleasure from that part.
Do you have any sisters or brothers?
I have one. I'm the oldest. My brother is 2 years, 9 months younger than I am. My sister is 18 months behind him.
What are their names?
Morris Goldstein and Leah Goldstein Isabel. My mother had only planned to have two children, and my sister found it a great emotional trauma to learn this. The flu epidemic of 1918 hit both my father and my brother, and my sister came along just that period, so it was an extremely difficult period. We lived on, Dad and Mother laugh about their honeymoon because it was raining, and they were married, I believe, in one home on Webb.
Webster Avenue, and they had rented an apartment a few blocks up. And when the ceremony was over and the guests had gone, they simply walked over to their new apartment and said, I don't know why we had to walk. It was pouring. We could have called for some sort of conveyance, but they didn't. And they got married on a Friday so that he could go right back to work on Monday.
Tell me
my
more.
I'll tell you this about my dad. My grandmother was a marvelous cook and baker and homemaker. And my mother, of course, started to work at 12 when she was here. But my dad said, now, before we get married, I want you to take time off and stay home and learn how to cook and bake from your mother. Which she did. I must say she became an expert.
Well, tell me about your home. What type of home was it?
We lived on Cliff Street, and I did not remember that. It was near the Rosalia home, and apparently it must have been a new area for the immigrants to move into, because they said that very recently a home on their street had still been occupied by the Mellon family. And after, when I was 3 years old, we moved to Point Breeze. Another family who had lived on Cliff Street bought a home at Lloyd and Edgern, which was considered way out in the country then. And I think the streetcars were still driven by horses. I'm not sure. But we moved to Lloyd and Edgern and lived on the second floor for a year and a half or so. I started kindergarten at Sterrett School from that house. That's where my brother and sister were both born, living there. And then we bought our own home in the same block at Edgerton and Lang, and we lived there until I was 13. And Sterrett School, it was a very interesting neighborhood, if you're interested in this. Lloyd Street had houses on it. Lang Avenue had houses on it. My block of Edgerton had houses on one side. To the east, Brick Woods was in the back of Sterrett School, and it was then a woods. The Frick home was occupied by the family at Reynolds and Homewood. Their property just continued with the woods, which was open to the public, and I roamed through those woods in many of my playing days. There was an open sewer which ran down the center of Frick Woods, which was not covered until it was given to the city and made a park. But it was a very pleasant place to play, unless you got too close to the open sewer. You know, the wildflowers were all over. Our teachers at Sterrett would frequently take a morning or an afternoon off in the spring to take us out in the woods and look at the wildflowers and have a real walk in the woods. The Frick home, the property continued west to what is now Leroy Road, which was built while I was living there. There was a big meadow. I remember cows grazing there and roses on the fences around that property. To the west, the whole area between Reynolds Street and Willard Street was one estate, Judge Coleman's. We call it the Coleman Estate. I've since read that Judge Wilkins lived there. That was, the house had been abandoned. There was a caretaker family living there, and it too was a woods, and there was a pond right behind the Lloyd Street houses and Edgerton Street, a pond where we could go to ice skate. We played a lot in Homewood Cemetery itself. We skated, ice skated there. We sled rode down those long slopes into Reynolds Street. Willard Street was the big sled riding street of the neighborhood because it was the safest for the little kids. The big tough boys could go take the long route on Homewood Cemetery and end up on Reynolds where there was some traffic. But Willard was a downhill and an up, and so you couldn't get out of control because your sled would start going uphill, and then you could only have to walk halfway up to go down up the next one.
Was your home a religious home?
My grandmother always lived with us. My grandmother...
Which grandmother?
My mother's mother. My father's mother died, you see, so that I only knew that one grandmother. She was a deeply religious person herself, but not Orthodox. She was one of the most tolerant, compassionate, sensitive people I have ever met. She deeply influenced my mother, and I know she was an influence on me, but I frequently think of how I am and how I want to become both my mother and father, but my mother and through her my grandmother, of the fine qualities that I would like to emulate. My point on the religion was that she would never be didactic about how the rest of us observed the religion. We kept a kosher home until my mother became concerned that I was too thin and not eating enough. And she decided she had to make food attractive, and at that point began putting butter, mixing up butter and milk with meat dishes.
Did you have Friday night services?
We lit the candles every Friday night, and my father always said the blessing. It was a custom which we continued all my life after I was married. my husband and I, and after we had children, had Friday night dinner with my mother and father until fairly recently. But they became too old. We began going to our place in the country Friday nights. There was a break in that custom not too long ago, but one I've always felt a little badly about. As a result of being together with them every Friday night and with the children, we always maintained a very close relationship. And we always lived very close.
Did you have any financial problems? Did your family, while you were growing up, was it an affluent home?
It was not an affluent home, but it was always one in which we knew there would be enough for all of our basic needs or for any medical care. We lived economically, but my mother and father felt recreation was also an important aspect of life. We were the first family on Edgerton Avenue to have a car. We bought a Dodge, which my father learned to drive, and which was the first car on the street. And I think we were one of the first families in our neighborhood to go away on what was formerly called a vacation. People used to go out, and I remember the friends I grew up with. They would go to the country for a couple of weeks to stay with grandparents or aunts or uncles, people on the farm. But we picked up and went to Atlantic City and stayed in a hotel. And that was a departure from the norm of that area. And those drives to Atlantic City were so interesting. Up the
Did your mother bring a lot of music and theater and things into the house?
Yes.
Through her love?
Yes.
And books?
And books. She was a great reader, but books and the love of music and theater were her highest. They were very important to her and therefore to us as a way of living. We always had the Victor records, the Caruso, and the Gallicherchi records. My mother took me to concerts at a very early age. My mother used to go to matinees on Wednesdays to a kind of theater that Dad wasn't that much interested in. And one day, when I was in the sixth or seventh grade, she said she would like to take me to a performance of the Countess Maritza. And she asked me to go in and get permission from the principal to be excused from school to go to the Alvin Theater. And I went in to Miss Craig, who was a very conventional principal. She was a wonderful principal. And I said, "May I be excused this afternoon? My mother wants to take me to the Alvin Theater to see a music performance." And she said, "Well, let me look at your report cards." And the report cards were good. And she said, "You may go." So as we walked, we always were excused from school that day. Someone played the piano in the hallway, and we went out to music. And I went out dancing, and I felt so privileged, and went down to the Alvin. I'll never forget the glamorous star. I don't know her name, but I thought she was the epitome of beauty and everything else. It was just a great experience. But I was taken to concerts. No one else in our neighborhood of my age was taken to things like that. And I don't think my brother and sister had that. You know, I, being the first, had some advantages there.
Were your parents strict and disciplined?
I can't ever remember discipline being an issue for consideration. We did what they told us. We accepted their authority completely. There was never a need to be forceful. And I found them flexible enough and understanding enough that I really did not have a need to rebel. I know I hear all this, and I know the experience that, in a certain sense, that we've had with our kids, but for myself, I must say, at the age of 20, I was ready to leave the home, and I did get married at that point, and I remember thinking, it's time for me to get away from the family. But in the up until that point, I was able to accept their values and their restrictions. Now, we were expected to be home on dates by 12 o'clock, and if not, make a telephone call right away so that they would know where we were. And you can call that strict, except I accepted it as absolutely the right thing to do.
How would you contrast that with the way things are today?
Well, I can't contrast it with other people. I know the discipline in our home with our children was very similar. Our kids, on the whole, accepted our values. There were enough differences in sexual mores that we had to accept things which would not have been acceptable in our day. But we never needed to exert strongest. But in a way, that's misleading, because the kids did. I made very clear what I wanted. I made it very clear how they should act within a house, and I made it very clear, you know, that I didn't tolerate physical destruction of anything, and it wasn't an issue. They accepted this, and there was never a problem with the kids in school. But somehow enough was conveyed, both to me and then from us to our kids, that this was accepted by the children. You know, when a little child puts his hand in the hot stove, I would have no hesitation on ramming away with no questions. I mean, there was no doubt, or you don't step off a curb. The way in which they were grabbed or held would be absolutely clear. Those aren't really minor. They understood how we expected them to live in the house. They understood what we expected of them. And I could never have deprived a child as a punishment of something that I really wanted them to have. If we were going to take the kids to a movie, which I wanted them to see, it would have been punishment for me to say, because you've done this, you can't go to the movie. We never disciplined through deprivation of what we wanted the children to have.
Well, can you contrast the political life of your family and your children's family? Was there a difference there in the view of politics?
Let me first complete something on religion, because I would talk about my grandmother setting the tone. We stopped having a kosher home, but my parents were charter members of B'nai Israel. We all went to Sunday school there and were confirmed there. And we observed the holidays. My dad's stories of the holidays, the meaning of them at the dinner table, were always delightful, because he was witty enough to make them relevant to a child's understanding. They were never heavy services. They were done in a lighthearted, meaningful, observant way. There was a time when I used to argue with my dad about saying, I really don't want to go to the synagogue for services. It's a beautiful day, and I'd much rather walk out of the park there. I feel I am being religious in my way. And Dad said, yes, you know, that's right. You are being religious in your way, but somebody also has to go to the synagogue. So we compromised. We never went for too long a period. Mm-hmm. We went for a comfortable period. My dad himself was never able to fast on Yom Kippur because of the nature of his digestive system. We always had light food in the house because he would have become ill if he didn't eat at regular intervals. So that I always felt that we were a religious family in a very pleasant way. Later, when I met my husband and was introduced to a true Orthodox family, what I learned was that the religion there was so overwhelming and demanding and inflexible that my husband rebelled against it completely and is far less interested in any religious observance than I remain, because he turned away from something that was not pleasant. And I always associated the way in which we observe religion as pleasant. My father, however, always wanted to support the Orthodox groups because he was afraid that the religion would become so diluted that there needed to be some core in the center that would remain unchanged.
Were your family interested in politics at all?
My dad, we used to spend hours every Friday night. From the time I was a child, our dinner table conversation discussed all the issues of the day. First they discussed schoolwork, and then the issues of the day. And my father was an early subscriber to the New Republic and The Nation, which I used to read in the house. And when they took a straw vote in Sterrett School on how the students were going to vote on the election in which La Follette, the farmer labor candidate from Wisconsin, was running, I was the only one in the whole school who voted for La Follette.